Item number 11 is case number CPC 2016-4345-CA, environmental case number ENV 2016-4346-CE. It's a discussion and concerning an ordinance amending the sections of the LA Municipal Code for the purpose of regulating ADUs, accessory dwelling units, and complying with state law. Staff have provided a technical modification, which you should have. Staff, welcome. Matt, hello. Hello. Dynamic duo today, the power crew. How much time do we need on this? Okay, we'll put 10 on, and we look forward to the conversation. Please proceed.
Good afternoon. Arthi Varma, principal planner with the Department of City Planning. The item before you is the city's proposed accessory dwelling unit ordinance. As you may recall, the Planning Commission previously considered this ADU ordinance in December of 2016. The ordinance was then heard by Plum Committee on March 21st, 2017, and then again in May of 2018. The Council Committee made several amendments to the ordinance and therefore directed that the ordinance be brought back to CPC for consideration. Just a word on process. The ordinance before you is that proposed ordinance as amended by Plum and requires the City Planning Commission to take a vote to approve or to disapprove. If the City Planning Commission wishes to make a recommendation to amend the ordinance or include further additions to this ordinance, the Commission may do so in a separate motion. I'll now hand it over to Matt Glesny, who will provide an overview of the proposed ordinance, highlighting the differences between the initial ordinance as considered by the City Planning Commission in December of 2016 and the proposed ordinance before you. Matt will also describe some of the technical modifications as mentioned to the proposed ordinance that was identified in a document released July 11th and posted for public viewing.
Thank you, Arthi. Matt Glesny, City Planning. Good afternoon, commissioners. Run through some background information that you may recall from last time in 2016, but just to make sure we're all on the same page. What is an ADU? An accessory dwelling unit is a complete second home on a lot that has another home, an existing, or it can also be now a proposed home. So it's always a second home on a lot, and you can actually build two homes at once now with a state law that changed in the beginning of last year. That home can be detached and separate from the main home. It can be a conversion of existing space, which has some special provisions I'll talk about, or it can be added to a main home or another structure. The intent with state law here, and this is, we really are, like all other cities in California, responding to a very significant state law change in January 2017. The state intent with those laws is to recognize ADUs as a really essential form of housing in the state of California, given our housing crisis. It represents a much cheaper, lower cost, no land costs, cheaper to construct form of housing that serves diverse needs, can extend home ownership to folks who would not otherwise be able to buy, and has a relatively lower environmental impact. So the intent is really that local ordinances can be adopted and that they should not unreasonably restrict the ability of homeowners to create ADUs. So I mentioned the state law change last year. This was really through AB 2299, adopted in 2016. And it really changed the ballgame on ADUs, saying that every city has to have a by right ministerial process to approve ADUs in the state of California, and that there is a set of, we're calling state standards, that every ordinance must adhere to. So there's certain baseline criteria that I'll mention on the next slide that has to be in every ordinance. And also said that, and basically as a result of that, our ordinance, and if you don't, sorry, let me back up, if you do not have an ordinance pre-existing that met those criteria, that those ordinances become null and void. And so that's what happened in the city of Los Angeles. Like most cities, our law did not have those state standards, and therefore was declared null and void on January 1st of 2017. At that point, we began using these state standards in the state law in the city of Los Angeles, and our new ordinance, of course, must be consistent with those state standards. And so here are the main state ADU standards that do apply and that are a part of this ordinance in front of you. Big changes to things like parking, setbacks, and passageways, which were some of the main barriers to ADUs. So on parking, it's one space per ADU, or it can be zero spaces for the ADU if you're within a half mile of any kind of public transit stop. Also, if you're in a historic district or have some car sharing available, there's also zero spaces required. There's a special provision if you're demolishing or converting a garage structure that the normally two garage car spaces do not need to be replaced with covered parking, which is a normal City of Los Angeles requirement. So that allows replacement parking to be tandem in the front yard, really in any location. With setbacks, they are not required for garage conversions, and generally 5 feet if built on top of a garage. Passageway requirements, which normally required a 10-foot clear-to-the-sky passage on the side of a property, are no longer required. And conversions, I mentioned conversions within existing buildings, existing space, have sort of a special status where they essentially do not need to meet zoning criteria. They have three checklists: if they have independent access, if they have sufficient setbacks or fire safety and meet the building code, you really cannot have extra zoning provisions on conversions within existing space. So since the new law has gone into effect, we've seen really large impact here in the city. This is showing the number of permits issued per month, going back to 2016, and showing the huge jump in the beginning of 2017. So we're at about 4,300 ADU permits issued since the law changed in January 2017. That's averaging about 300, even 350 a month in recent months. It's quite a significant jump in permits for ADUs. Majority we're finding are conversions and additions and not standalone new construction of buildings. Here's a map. You can see the permits mapped out. This is as of about 2 months ago. Again, showing the breakdown between the type and seeing a lot of red dots, which are the conversions. We think about half of the ADUs have been conversions of existing space. About another 35% are the additions in blue, and the minority, maybe 17-18%, were new construction. But you can see distributed quite well across the city. So the proposed ordinance in front of you, like I said, includes all those state required provisions. It would officially delete our 1985 second dwelling unit ordinance, just get that off the books. And then it would include about 7 or 8 additional provisions that are sort of tailored locally here for Los Angeles. And so I'm gonna spend some time on the top four in bold. I have thrown slides, so I'll just run through those quickly. But the ordinance would allow for movable tiny houses. This is a change that the Plum Committee of City Council added in. I'll talk about exactly what those are and what that looks like. There's a restriction on ADUs in hillside areas, and this was part of the ordinance that was brought to you last time, and the commission had some changes on that. We'll run through that. There's also new regulations for equine keeping areas, horse keeping areas in the city of Los Angeles, some unique regulations on siting ADUs that we're proposing as a result of a council motion primarily. And there are some conversion concerns that we have just with the way the conversions have been working out. Some of this is just based on us having a year and a half of experience looking at projects and seeing a few things that we felt we weren't comfortable with and thought we could address through a local ordinance. So that's one of those, and we'll talk about that. Also, a difference would be preventing detached ADUs in the front of an existing home. And really the idea there is that ADUs are really meant to be accessory structures in the rear, protect a sort of typical relationship between a main home and a back home, and felt it appropriate to have ADUs. Really, they are tailored for rear yards and a lot of things like setbacks and things like that, and so having them in the front yards presents some concerns. Also, the ordinance would prevent expanded driveways in the front setback. As I mentioned, parking is liberalized in the state law. We had a concern just that folks would take the easy route and perhaps opt to pave their front yard, and that's a concern we've heard from many folks, that parking, while it can be on an existing driveway, concern with expanding pavement in the front yard to accommodate a parking space. Finally, there's a kind of relaxation on building separation. There's normally a 10-foot building separation required between residential buildings. We've actually gotten rid of that and are proposing just relying on the building code for our building separations and not the 10-foot zoning code separation. So to get into movable tiny homes, this is a new concept, but it is something that is growing across some cities in California. I've started to do this, Fresno, Ojai. We're talking about 150 to 430 square foot. Sometimes they're called tiny homes on wheels. That's really what characterizes these. These are also sometimes called park model trailers in the more official parlance. These are structures that are towable on wheels, but are different than a normal sort of camper or RV in the sense that they really are meant for permanent or semi-permanent habitation. They're designed like cottages and bungalows, and not necessarily like an RV that, you know, move on their own. So these are a unique typology that has its own certification in terms of code requirements through the ANSI code, not a building code requirement. So they meet their safety and health requirements through this, it's called American National Standards Code for these types of structures. So they would be adhering to that and not to the building code. They can be on wheels, jacks, or foundations. Any of that would work. We do ask that if they're on wheels or jacks, they be covered. They cannot have their own power, I mentioned. Connected to utilities is part of this. They would be treated like any other ADU for siting purposes, and we did include some design standards, again, to try to have these, make sure they look like residential properties. The hillside regulations, just quickly, this is a ban on new construction and additions in hillside defined areas, but still allowing for conversions within existing space. So when we brought this to the Planning Commission a year ago, Planning Commission recommended some exceptions to that rule, allowing ADU new construction if it's within a half mile of transit or on a standard street in terms of the street width. Plum committee at City Council removed that exception and put it back to the original straight prohibition. This affects about 136 single family properties, which is a large chunk of the single family properties in the city, about 28%. But we looked hard at the impact of this based on the last year and a half, and recognize that really this is only going to affect a small percentage of the permits we've seen. The ADUs we've seen in hillsides have largely been conversions that would not be affected, so this would just affect the new construction. Equine keeping, the issue here is that there's an existing requirement for distance between a residential and an equine structure. So the concern is that if someone builds an ADU in their backyard, in an area for equine keeping, that somebody's future ability to have an equine keeping structure would be impacted potentially because of a new residential structure in the rear yard that could not allow for the needed radius of either 35 or 75 feet. So the solution here was not to ban them, but to try to just make sure that the ADU is sited in a way that allows flexibility for the neighbors in the future. So basically, try to keep the ADU near to your house and not way in the back of the yard near the rear lot line. So there's a regulation requiring the ADU to be closer to the home than the rear lot line. Also within 50 feet of the home in cases where you have a giant lot, which a lot of these are, just to keep it somewhat again close to the house again, and minimum 10-foot setbacks. So you can see the way that is intended to work to allow these equine structures to come in the future and not be impeded by an ADU. Conversion regulations. I mentioned that conversions are treated distinctly in state law. They have no zoning code review, essentially, and so that creates a couple issues. One is that somebody, and we've seen this, folks have realized they can convert their home to an ADU and then build a larger home in back as just a primary home and not an ADU. So they turn the main home in the front to an ADU and then build as big of a structure as they can in the rear yard. And that's presenting some issues, obviously, with having a huge structure without those kind of limits in the backyard. So our solution there was to limit a rear home being done at the same time as an ADU conversion to 1,200 square feet, just like an ADU would be. The second issue we're having with conversions is the concern that folks would be able to build a accessory structure like a garage on this property line and then come in the next day and literally say, now I want to convert it to an ADU. And we just feel like that is a bit of a loophole and not the intent of state law to be able to sort of get around rules that normally would apply. So our solution there is to just say you could still convert those structures, but they're not gonna be able to take advantage of the 0-foot setbacks, for example, that conversions normally are able to have. So you would still be able, so there's a general prohibition on converting structures that are built in the future, but still allowing that to be converted, but not under the conversion standards, which again is looser, requires no setback. So you may have to lop off 5 feet of that structure and conform with a 5-foot setback. Size limits, quickly, there were size limits in the ordinance we brought to you in 2016. Those have been removed by the Plum Committee, but just wanted to mention there are other size requirements as part of the zoning code that are incorporated into the ordinance. That includes a two-story limit on all these buildings. They have to be in the rear yard. They're subject to residential floor area requirements. They're subject to baseline mansionization, as well as these new R1 variation zones that are getting very detailed about massing and bulk and things. Just miscellaneous, I think I'll run through that very quickly. Just want to address in our special historic preservation zone specific plan areas that you would only be able to apply objective standards in those areas, so that's in the code. I'll go ahead and just wrap up. There's a recommended action to approve the proposed ordinance. Lastly, I wanted to mention the technical modifications. Sorry, I thought we had a slide, but I believe you have it in front of you. It's been posted. The technical modifications we're requesting are threefold. One, on the tiny home, to remove the requirement for a minimum room size. Instead, we're just relying based on an overall size of the structure from 150 to 430 square feet. The second modification would make just a minor change to a section about the zoning administrator's authority to make a minor change in the future based on state law. State law is changing very quickly. We want to have the flexibility to be able to strike things out and be nimble as state law changes. And so that change is just intended to give the zoning administrator the flexibility to do that. And lastly, a minor change to the utility. We had some language in the ordinance about utility connections. Just felt like that added more confusion when we talked to our friends at DWP and other agencies. So just don't feel like we need utilities mentioned in the zoning code. That's existing state law, so we just struck that from the proposed ordinance. Apologize for the over the time. Happy to answer.
Great, thank you. At this time, we're going to open up the conversation to public testimony. We have a robust number of speakers, so each speaker will have a minute to address the commission with their thoughts, concerns, questions with regards to this item. As I call you up, please line up behind the podium. Each person, again, will have a minute. Once they state their name, the time will begin. I have Ira Belgrade, Amy Turnbull, and Teresa Baker. Please approach and share your thoughts.
Ira Belgrade, Yimby, LA. This proposed accessory dwelling ordinance does not comply with state law and will be declared null and void if passed. I have confirmed this with State Senator Bob Wachowski's office, author of ADU Law SB 1069, and Greg Nicholas with the California Department of Housing and Community Development, who is in charge of keeping municipalities' ordinances compliant. The Planning Department is attempting to override state law with regards to conversions of legally existing structures by attempting to put a timestamp on what legally existing means with the term effective date because they don't like what is an apparent loophole in state law. Overriding the notwithstanding clause of the state law has the potential to affect future generations of homeowners by denying them their rights under state law to legally convert existing structures into ADUs with all the advantages the conversion process brings, like not requiring separate utility connections. Greg Nicholas from the housing, from HCD, has said he'd be willing to speak to anyone on this commission or the city to confirm what I'm saying.
Thank you very much, sir, for that important information. Hi, good afternoon. Before you begin, let me also invite Matt TK Devine and Kevin Polk. Go right ahead, good afternoon.
Hi, my name is Amy Turnbull, and I'm the president of the American Tiny House Association. I'd like to thank the members of the commission for your consideration in approving this draft ADU ordinance as presented today. The American Tiny House Association, its members, and the people that we represent through business applaud the inclusion of movable tiny houses as accessory dwelling units. The Planning Department, with support from the commission, is clearly demonstrating their commitment to providing more affordable housing within the city. How wonderful that we can bring attainable housing to so many. Our children who are struggling under school loan repayment, job scarcity, our seniors who lost their savings in the housing bubble of 2008, all these people will benefit from the increase in affordable rental housing and, in particular, movable tiny houses. The beauty of it is, this is a market-based system. So with the support of the American Tiny House Association, we hope that you will pass the inclusion of movable tiny houses in this ordinance. Thank you.
Thank you. Mark Vianatos, please join the line. Go right ahead. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Planning Commission. Thank you for your efforts and for being here today to discuss movable tiny houses as acceptable and much needed housing option. I'm the director of a local business that educates and assists people with their tiny house goals. So these are small and quaint homes that have everything one needs for a cozy daily living. And foundation-based ADUs are such a wonderful addition to the city's housing options, but they do take more time to develop and are still a significant price tag. And so having this as an option is really desirable for people who just cannot enter into the options that are currently available. Flexible housing for artists and students. You have people that are trying to downsize as they get older and need more affordable options. Amy spoke on a bit of those options, but I would like to say that having $150 might be, I would ask to consider even $120. I've seen a lot of awesome 14, 16, and 8-foot tiny houses that are really beautiful, so please consider. Thank you.
I'm sure staff will respond to that. Before you begin, can I have Alex or Alexis Rivas and David DePinto also join? Go right ahead. Good afternoon.
Thank you. I agree that movable tiny homes could do wonders to increase our city's affordable housing stock. My team and I support them, but the way the law is written, I'm concerned that the practical use of movable tiny homes will be hindered by the requirement of these temporary structures to connect to permanent utilities. These connections average about $10,000 in integral property changes. This cost and inconvenience can discourage landowners from embracing movable tiny homes and undermine the purpose of non-integral movable tiny homes. The goal, if the goal is easing our affordable housing crisis, we've got to make it as easy as possible for folks to embrace movable tiny homes. So the technology is out there. We've got solar power. We can convert air into water. We've got gray water irrigating vegetable gardens and advancements in composting and incineration, so we can eradicate waste free of human hand. This ordinance, though, it effectively outlaws all of these processes. So instead, please consider replacing the current language by requiring movable tiny homes, if not connecting to existing utilities, to obtain a waiver from a safety inspector to ensure each movable tiny home uses alternative utilities while meeting the objectives of local health and safety standards. Thank you.
What's your name, sir?
Matt T.K. Devine.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you.
Can I ask also Aya to join the line? Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
Hi, Mark Valianatos with Abundant Housing LA. Los Angeles City has the most single-family properties of any city in the country. And it's embarrassing that over the past century, we've never had a good permissive ordinance to allow people to have second units. We can change that today or over this process. We support those elements of the ordinance that improve upon state law, like the movable tiny homes. I agree with Ira's commentary that the timestamp is unnecessary and possibly illegal. And I also want to mention that Abundant Housing may oppose this ordinance if it doesn't do two things. One, blanket ban in the hillsides is arbitrary, unnecessary, and I support a motion. We support a motion to change that back to original determination. And secondly, ADUs up to a certain size should not count for floor area ratio. You'll force homeowners to choose between expanding their own home, which they may need to do for their family growth, or adding an ADU, which will help solve our housing crisis. So please exempt 800 or 1,200 square feet from FAR. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Alexis Rivas, and I'm the co-founder and CEO of Cover. Cover is a technology company whose mission is to make thoughtfully designed and well-built homes for everyone. We've built a software tool that allows us to analyze what can be built in every backyard in LA for ADUs. And our software has been, we're able to analyze on hillside lots using slope band analysis to determine exactly how many potential ADUs can be built on hillsides. The software tool has been featured in Bloomberg, Architectural Digest, Curbed LA, Fast Company, and the data shows that this ordinance would prevent 70,000 potential ADUs from being built in hillside areas. A lot of these hillside areas are actually relatively flat and have standard-sized streets with plenty of parking, and we request that the ordinance as proposed is not approved. Thank you.
Mark, what's the name of your, I didn't have a speaker card for you. Did I call you?
Yes.
What's your last name?
Rivas. Alexis Rivas.
Oh, Alexis. And your name of your company?
Cover.
Okay, thanks, I'll look for that. I must have misplaced it.
Thank you.
Before you begin, let me invite a few folks up. Marion Dodge, Dominique Moody, and Liz Heron, please join the line. Good afternoon.
Hi, my name is Aya Garfaidi. I support flexible housing topologies because we not only need to introduce new ways of building, but revisit the ideas we have about family and community structure. I'm concerned that the rigidity introduced by this ordinance, particularly the hillside and conversion regulations, as well as not allowing the ADUs in the front yard, will stunt the growth of what has been a successful response to the housing crisis. I would like to express my opposition to the hillside and conversion regulations within this ordinance. Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. One second. Sorry, I'm taking so many notes. Can I also ask Stephen from SELF to join? Go right ahead.
My name is Dominique Moody, and I've been a visual artist and educator in Los Angeles for more than 20 years. But I have found that it became more and more difficult to afford to live in the city. I'm also an artist that has designed and constructed a tiny house on wheels at 140 square feet. I have recently been commissioned by Los Angeles to be an artist selected to do the Destination Crenshaw Corridor. And I would love to be able to come back into the city. But right now, my tiny unit is not legal to do so. So, like myself and many, many other people who can add diversity and benefit to this city, I would love to see an ordinance that really reflects these possibilities of the ADU.
Thank you, ma'am. Robert Mendel, please join. And Darlene Conte, please join. Go right ahead. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Elizabeth Heron. I'm a hillside architect. I've been doing hillside architecture for 31 years in the city of Los Angeles. And my concern is regarding the blanket prohibition as a class of hillside structures. Considering that there are 28% of the available ADU stock in the city of LA, by prohibiting hillside ADUs, such as they have been restricted, I don't think tracks with state law, and this ordinance would probably be struck down and deemed null and void by the state. So I think that it's important to consider each community and have more targeted and refined kinds of restrictions, if need be, for hillside structures. Thank you very much.
Thank you. John Kotler, also please join, and William E. Ike. Hi, go right ahead, sir.
Stephen Appleton, thank you for your service, commissioners. I want to affirm some of the same statements others are making about the hillside zones. I sent a letter that you should have in front of you of two pages and several photo submissions. I want to point out the difference between evaluating the question of whether prohibiting hillside ADUs based on permits issued in 2017, whether that really tells us anything or whether we should be looking at specific conditions. My attempt in looking at specific conditions in a 1 mile radius around Cypress Park area was to look at the number of opportunities that are there, and there are many. And I also outlined contrasting conditions such as in Franklin Hills, where you're adjacent to Beverly Hills, not to commercial districts that directly abut the hillsides. We make a tremendous mistake if we exclude these areas that are not to be excluded because of safety, but because of an ideology that's not been thoroughly examined. Thank you.
Thank you. Amy? Go right ahead.
Darlene Conte, hello. While I commend the commission for revisiting the ADU ordinance to include tiny homes, equine, and hillside structures, at present, state law does not say anything about converting existing structures. These are the citizens like myself who have been most impacted by these ADU ordinances. The 2017 law did not protect those who already inherited a guest house. I have spent over $15,000 in fines, fees, and construction over the past 9 months to attempt to legalize my guest house. After many misdirectives from an unplanned plan checker, we have now been told to rip everything out of the unit only to put it back in and permit it that way. Government should serve its citizens and ultimately really do no harm. Do no harm. Overregulation grinds the city to a halt and punishes its citizens, and we've worked so hard to afford this dream. Please simplify this code to include existing structures to be able to do a one-step process for legalization. This city has a lot of big problems to solve. Let's not make mountains out of molehills and bury residents in red tape pertaining to their private property and their tiny ADUs. Thank you.
Thank you. David Prince, please also join the line. Go right ahead. Good afternoon.
Hi, my name is John Coulter. When the proposed hillside ban first appeared, the planning department made a list of criteria that they were basing the bill on for such things as large amounts of natural vegetation, substandard streets, not near public transportation, impacts on water and sewer services, safety impacts due to narrow hillside streets, and a higher fire risk. The hillside map that the proposed ban is based on doesn't map for a single one of those things. All it maps, and roughly based on satellite data, is whether there is a 15% slope or not in a particular area. It doesn't, therefore all sorts of properties, mine included, are getting caught up in this ban that don't have any of those characteristics, that are near transportation, that are on wide streets, that don't have a significant slope, that aren't in a fire hazard area, etc. Thank you.
No, thank you. Jake Matlott, please also join. Go right ahead, sir.
Yes, my name is William Ike. I'm the land use chairman for the Shadow Hills Property Owners Association. I'm here to support two things. One is the equine provisions. We're an equestrian area. We are probably going to end up being the last equestrian area in the city of Los Angeles. And this is important. We'd like to also find out some way to have the Department of Building and Safety at least alert us so that we can all do the same measurements and things don't just slip through the cracks. I'm also here to support the portion related to the hillsides. Our hillsides basically burned to the ground in the Latuna fire. And there were some buildings were lost, more would have been lost had there been accessory dwelling units. I'm also on the Fondland Foundation. We own 625 acres of open space in the city of Los Angeles, most of it hilly, burned to the ground. And the streets are substandard. This is very important, and I appreciate your including that. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Warren, please also join the line. Hi, good afternoon.
Hi. David Prince. I'm a homeowner in Northeast LA and live in a hillside zone. I've been working on developing a new construction ADU project in my backyard. And as we've heard, the new proposal for the guidelines will eliminate the possibility of this type of construction in a hillside zone. To date, I've already put a significant amount of time and money into developing the project, including a survey, soils report, architectural and engineering plans, but I'm not ready to submit to plan check. I'm concerned that my project won't be submitted before the rules change and that my invested time and money will be lost. I'd like to advocate for myself and homeowners in a similar situation for a reprieve for 2 months after adoption to allow for complete submission of the project to plan check. Thank you.
Thank you. Come on up, sir. You're the last one today.
Wonderful. My name is Jake Malott. I'm a land use consultant. I am opposed to the ordinance. Should we wait till it starts? There we go.
Go ahead.
I'm opposed to the ordinance as it stands for two reasons. Blanket removal of hillside and then also the front yard. I'll start with the front yard, and that's because a lot of through lots have frontage on both sides. So having a unit in the backyard or front yard is going to remove that opportunity. Secondly, for the hillside, there are a lot of properties which front on standard streets and are in the hillside. Now, if we were to remove just the substandard, I could be amenable to that, but I think that blanket removing all hillside is wrong, one, for unique properties that people can rent, and then also because as we see new development in the city of LA, we see a lot of massive financial institutions owning properties. I want to see more mom and pop landlords remaining. 136,000 hillside properties, and as he stated, 72,000 could have ADUs on them. So those are my reasons. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, sorry, commissioners. I did fill out a speaker card. My name's Emma Howard. I'm with CD4.
This is public testimony,
oh,
so you
sorry.
Go after the public. You get you get after them.
Sorry.
Not at all. I see you, Emma. I think we have one more gentleman, and then we'll hear from you, Emma. Sir, come on up. I don't know if I called your name or not. I apologize if not.
My name is Warren Christensen. Maybe I missed it.
Go right ahead, Warren.
Thank you. I live in Mount Washington. I've been a resident there for 40 years, and we're on a hillside property with narrow streets. So I'm very aware and familiar with the problems of trying to get more housing on the hillsides. So I concur with a lot of what is being discussed and developed. My concern is mostly about when the in January of 2017, when it finally became possible to go ahead and do it for a brief period of time until you get these laws together now, you could do it. So people were doing it. And we had a lot, by the time you submit your plans, call them, submit them, and wait for the year and a half for the plan check to get it back and get started, and then build the house. There will never be enough time if you approve this, and it can't be built in, say, 6 more months when we actually will be able to go ahead and start building the property, which would be the dwelling itself, the primary dwelling, before you can start doing the ADU. It's difficult and won't happen. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Other than the council office, are there any other public speakers who didn't hear their name or have yet filled out a speaking card that wish to address the commission? Hearing or seeing none, Emma, come on up. Gosh, lots of questions about the hillside prohibition, Emma. Love to hear the council office's thoughts on that.
Well, I have a prepared statement, and then I'd be
Amazing.
Happy to answer questions.
Great.
My name is Emma Howard. I'm the senior planning deputy for Council Member Rue, Council District 4. I'm here to speak in support of the proposed accessory dwelling units ordinance before you today. On behalf of the council member, we want to thank the planning staff who have given their time and expertise to craft this ordinance, especially Matthew Glesny and Arthi Varma. The council member believes this ordinance strikes a necessary balance between the need to permit accessory dwelling units and create creative housing types across the city and the special considerations that should be taken in areas with additional community zoning mechanisms or safety needs, such as HPOZs and hillside areas. In particular, I'm here to relay his strong support for the ADU hillside standards and the prohibition on detached hillside ADUs. As you know, when state law changed in 2017, there was a massive citywide increase in ADU permitting. Of those approximately 2,000 ADUs, only 2% or 52 units were detached ADUs in the hillsides. We believe this current language will allow for 98% of the other ADUs, which also includes converting space inside an existing unit, while preventing additional construction impacts on the fragile roads and sensitive hillsides. I also wanted to note that nearly all of these hillside areas are also very high fire hazard severity zones, especially in CD4. And as the brush fire on Tuesday in Griffith Park, also in CD4, shows, these hillside areas are very vulnerable to severe hazards. Because the current regulations are open-ended, we urge you to move this ordinance forward to City Council today, so that these reasonable and thoughtful protections can take effect, while allowing a simple regulatory process to create much-needed alternate dwelling types across the city. Thank you. Any questions?
No, but I hope you can stick around and hear the conversation.
Okay.
Thank you. Staff, did you want to respond to any of the public comment we heard?
Sure. Matt Glesny, planning. I'll take a couple and then probably give a couple to Arthi. A relatively minor comment that we heard was regarding the front yard, the requirement that ADUs be in the front yard, and a concern that that would not work on through lots. And I just wanted to point out that there actually are exceptions to that rule. So we would not require the ADU to be in the back on a through lot. So that is in the ordinance. Through lots have an exception. There's also an exception for front yard additions to existing structures that may exist in the front yard. So often there's a front garage that would actually be allowed to be added to or converted to an ADU. So the proposal, the regulation on the front yards only applies to detached, not in this particular instances.
Arthi Varma, I'll respond to a couple of the points that were brought up during the public hearing. Regarding the 120 square feet for the minimum size of a movable tiny home versus the recommended 150 square feet, that number 150 comes from a state law related to the size of efficiency units. So that's 150 square feet that would allow for living space and kitchenette and bathroom. The recommendation comes from allowing enough
habitable space for a smaller dwelling unit. So that's where that 150 came from. Regarding the concern about the conversion, and as of the effective date of the ordinance, again, the intent there, as Matt mentioned in the presentation, is that there's an effective loophole in state law that would make the ability for cities to provide locational requirements in their local ordinances irrelevant if any future structure could be constructed and converted. So the idea is that you can still build new structures in areas that are, for example, prohibited in this ordinance, as is the hillside areas, but that future conversion would have to be adhering to the ADU laws in place. So if an accessory structure was built in the hillside area in the future and wished to be converted, as long as it met the setback requirements for habitability, that changed from an accessory structure into an accessory dwelling unit would be able to occur. But again, the intent is really to ensure that we are allowing for conversions of existing space in a way that doesn't allow for future structures to be built, avoiding some of our zoning regulations that are really meant to address compatibility in neighborhoods.
Can I, this is Renee Dick Wilson. I just want to add that I had this occur on a project of mine once where there was I did a conversion as the architect. I was a conversion of a garage into an accessory structure conforming, and what the Building and Safety Department had me do was build an interior wall. So the structure stayed where it was, and we built in a wall in the interior that was at the setback. I'll just have you know, that's what they had us do, so that the structure could not go the extent into the setback. They had me build an interior wall in the building that allowed them to not use that space. So that, just so you know, that's what happens. Okay.
So. And we're, Arthi Varma, we're happy to work with Building and Safety to explore implementation solutions.
Nicely pivoted. Anything else you wanted to respond to?
I think that hits the main points. Happy to answer any other questions.
All right, we're gonna take a 5-minute recess. It's 2:02, we'll return shortly. Hey, there we are. Welcome back, everybody. It's 2:12. This is David Ambrose. We've returned from recess. Staff, was there anything else you wanted to share in response to the public comment?
Nope.
We're okay. All right, with that point, maybe we'll open up the conversation to commissioner questions and comments. I know I have a number of questions myself, in particular around wheeled structures, so we'll get to that if no one else does. May I start, Karen? May I start with you with any questions or comments, or I can come back to you, whatever is your desire at this moment. Do you need more time to ruminate?
Yeah, I mean, I two issues that came up for me were, of course, the hillside issue, which seems like where the most challenge is right now, but also someone raised the issue of alternative utilities, which I think is somewhat in alignment with all the talk about sustainability. So it seems like that's an interesting issue to consider.
Agreed. And get more information on potentially. I don't know if we have a ton. Vahid Khorsan?
On the equine, one, I think the comment was it's banned but with conditions. Is that what it is?
Allowed with conditions.
Allowed with conditions.
That's close another to way the front it. Structure.
That's right. It's just siding, siding.
Matt, will you pull up that slide while you explain, or perhaps that will be helpful, Vahid?
Yeah, so it's just a requirement where the ADU is located on the site, and the idea is to try to pull it closer to the main house. These are often really large lots, these equine lots, and so there's a lot of space, and just trying not to locate that way in the back corner, which then might impact all three, four of your neighbors. So if you have a lot of room, tuck it closer to your house. That will then allow equine structures to come in the future.
So I was just thinking, with that said, what you're saying, could it be not closer than 75 feet to the property line? Could that also be added in there?
Yeah, I think that runs a risk of it on a smaller lot. Maybe you don't have room if it is a smaller lot, if I'm understanding you correctly, that you may not have the 75 feet in some smaller lots, and then it would totally preclude an ADU. We're trying to be flexible and allow it, but when you have a large lot, tuck it in.
Well, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I guess the way I interpreted was allow it with exceptions was so that, you know, for example, if I'm going to put an ADU and my neighbor is the one who's moving in with horses, I don't want to limit their ability. I'm sorry. So I wonder if maybe the alternative solution would be to say not within 75 feet of the property line, so whatever I choose to do doesn't impact my neighbor. I'm trying to find out if, you know, even if it's a smaller lot.
Arthi Verma, so the existing regulations pertaining to equine structures require a 75-foot distance separation for non-K district lots to be, so the if you are viewing the slide over there, the equine structure must be 75 feet away from the habitable structure. So the regulations in this ordinance are pertaining to the accessory dwelling unit, which are requiring the ADU to be located with no further than 50 feet from the primary dwelling unit in order to allow the achievement of that 75 feet from the neighboring equine structure.
Okay, I mean, I understand. I just think if my neighbor wants to put in, you know, an equine facility and I'm within it. But moving on to the hillside, why exactly are we being asked to remove it? I was not a part of the proceedings the first time around, so I'm not sure why it was put in and why now it's being removed. So what is the underlying reason for removing?
Well-organized hillside community that doesn't want them. The rationale that we discussed at the original meeting, we delineated between full-size roads that could handle it and within proximity to transit to remove some of the more substandard streets and those that are far from transit, which took care of most of the concerns that are again raised as scarecrows, in my opinion. But they are now a prohibition completely, as proposed, in spite of our recommendation to council. My sense is it was more of an organized lobby, and once again, communities that are flat are being burdened with more of the equitable issue of finding housing opportunities in Los Angeles, and the hillside is not being asked to bear that burden, even on standard streets near mass transit.
So then my next question is, so the mobile tiny houses, would those be precluded from the hillside as well?
Yes.
So what happens if we reject council's...
Let's talk about that in a moment.
Okay. That's all I have.
I don't mean to foreclose that.
No. Those are my thoughts.
Down a different pathway. If there's any other changes you want to see or anything else. Okay. I do want to have that process conversation at the end, though, sir. Caroline?
Yes. You know, seeing all the folks that came out and spoke about Hillside, I certainly don't understand fully why we're precluding 130 some odd homes from doing what the rest of the city is doing or able to do. And that's what, 30% or so, you said, of the homes. They may not have quite applied yet, but I still think that I'd like to hear from my other commissioners about how you feel about that and why that's okay.
Caroline, thank you. Anything else?
No.
Okay.
This is Renee Dake Wilson. I certainly don't agree on the ban on hillside zone districts in any way. I happen to be one of those people in the David Ryu's hillside zone district, and I completely disagree with his perspective on this. I'm also an architect. I work in a lot of hillside zone districts on single family housing with people trying to put in ADUs on standard streets that are technically in hillside areas and not at greater risk, have fine access to fire and life safety equipment. My backyard backs up to that fire in Griffith Park. I mean, I get it, but I do not understand why we're putting a blanket ban on ADUs in 28% of the housing stock in Los Angeles. If we're going to have a limitation in that,
if some neighborhoods are going to say they don't want it, or some elected officials, call out a specific neighborhood. I don't know how you're going to have a vote about that, though, because my neighborhood, I bet you'd find 50% of the people want it and 50% of the people don't. So I think that if we do a blanket ban, we're not allowing diversity of opinion, and there are going to be some naturally occurring people not doing ADUs in hillsides because they're difficult to construct in a certain area. It's overly expensive in a certain area. So it's really, I think, a complete miss. The staff report, I have great respect for the work you do, Matt Glesny and Arthi, but the point made in there about how only, I think, 2% or 3% of the ADUs submitted in 2017 were in hillside zones, I mean, that might be the fact, but that has nothing to do with whether we should ban that going forward. That is just banning a small number of them. I think that's should be stricken from the staff report as a justification for why to do something. If we're having a significant housing change, and if we're going to, there may be areas, Steve Appleton's letter was extremely well spoken in this area, but where he talked about there may be neighborhoods that want to be exclusive and want to have a more large home, privacy kind of feel to them. Well, okay, fine. But there are a lot of hillside areas such as Glassell Park, such as Highland Park, a hillside district where Gil Cedillo had the city's pilot ADU installed in an HBOZ zone. Did I say it's a hillside zone? That's where the city of Los Angeles pilot ADU is being built right now. And it's a perfectly viable location. And that doesn't make any sense to ban. That's a neighborhood in between Glassell Park, Highland Park, those neighborhoods where you're really talking about ADUs as a way to build generational wealth. You're not talking about it as changing neighborhood character. And if Councilmember Ryu was going to come here and say, I don't want to have that, it's not safe, I got to disagree. Because there are plenty of hillside areas that are not substandard streets that are big enough you can drive a bus around there, that you can get a fire truck on there, and that would really help solve our housing crisis, because Los Angeles has a disproportionate amount of our housing tied up in R1 zone districts, and that's exactly what's being done and converted in this ordinance. So I would ask that planning come back with more information about which areas are truly a safety risk, rather than a blanket ban on hillsides. I think that's 100% whiff to throw. You're throwing out the baby with the bathwater, and I really like babies. So there you go. That's Red Hillside. I have heard a little bit about AB 2071 over the last day, and I understand we have the DWP attorney who's been here all day, and I don't know who you are, but thank you for that work. This is a legislation that's pending in the state about building under power lines. As I said, I'm a single-family residential architect much of the time, and the number of garages and pools that have power lines over them in the city of Los Angeles is incredible. So this legislation, is my understanding, is that it's trying to work out the conflict between habitable space and having a power line over it. I don't think it's worked out yet in the state level. The legislation is still being churned through at the state level, and I don't think there's necessarily an easy solution to it. The way power lines work in single-family residential neighborhoods, typically, oftentimes you have an easement for a power pole. It's usually in the back side of the lot. It's sometimes in the front side of the lot. And then you have a power, what's called your drop, your feed going from the power pole to the house, and that determines where your power line goes. So if you're going to have your drop go over your garage, right now DWP is, I believe, saying you cannot convert your garage to an ADU. This is an instance that happens over an extremely large number of single-family residences in Los Angeles. I mean, do I wish these were all subterranean? Yes. But until that's worked out, I'm very concerned about making a decision about how we're going to move forward. That's problematic to me. About movable tiny homes, I'm supportive of that. I don't quite understand how the utilities work for a movable tiny home, but I believe they are one step up from a mobile home, and I think it's great to have a low income way to get in there, because I agree ADUs are a really great way to build flexibility into the way people live in their single family residences. That makes it really great. So
thank you, Renee.
Thank you.
Thank you, Renee. Mr. Dana Perlman.
Thanks. Briefly, I lived in the hills for 20 some years. I lived on streets that were substandard, and I certainly understand in those streets where there would be a concern, because I often wondered how a fire engine would make it up those streets. And they're quite burdened as it is. At the same point, I lived on streets that were very expansive, and the houses had good lot size. And I agree with Renee. And other commissioners who mentioned this, we should not treat those areas any differently. There should not be discrimination on those areas, either that they can't expand or shouldn't share the burden of the city, which is trying to address some severe housing shortages. So I would propose we go back to our original language when we get to it. I have no problem with the equine keeping issue. As far as the tiny houses, I appreciate the letter we got from the American Tiny House Association. I wish it was a smaller letter. That would have been cute. I think their comment's well taken. It's from the comment Renee made before about the wall. I frankly don't care about the size of the interior rooms. I don't think we should be getting down into those details. I think the concern is the overall size of the structure. So as long as the structure has this certain size, then it should be called a tiny home. If it's a single large room, great. If it's multiple rooms, great. So I would suggest incorporating that language. As far as the gentleman from Yimby, LA, another great name, I understand what you're trying to parse there, and I did go and read the state ordinance, and for my fellow commissioners, the state ordinance says existing. It doesn't say as of when. And that right now is an ambiguity in the law. And my understanding of the law from my few 30 plus years of practicing as a lawyer is that the city, which is now required by that state law to impose its own ordinance, can use its interpretive powers. And I think it's appropriate to have existing defined in the ordinance. I do think we should have a little more discussion about that, because I guess the issue would be if it's existing as of the time the ordinance is enacted, then if we look at a property down the road that is newly constructed, and then 5 years from then they want to do something, it wouldn't have been existing, which I don't know that we should be treating that. I don't know the justification for treating it differently.
Right.
It seems to me that the policy reasons between allowing the transition from an existing structure into an ADU shouldn't really matter whether it was existing at the date of the ordinance or not. Those are my thoughts.
And
one last thing. I appreciate the gentleman from DWP. These are very complicated issues that I don't know that we're going to be able to hash them out here, because it's going to depend on what the state legislature does and dealing with the, not CUP,
what? ADU?
Something like that. It's in dealing with the regulations regarding public utilities. So I don't know that we can necessarily be held up by that one way or the
Thank you, Commissioner Perlman. Commissioner Millman.
That rhymes. It's a long day, I'm sorry. I was moved by Caroline, who said, you know, she wanted to know how we felt about ADUs in Hillsides and why we would think that was okay. And I don't think it's okay to do a blanket ban on ADUs in the Hillsides. I concur with much of what's been said. Mr. Appleton's letter, I think, is particularly illustrative. Future Street in Cypress Park is not steep. It is a very easy area to build ADUs. It's actually very close to a fire station. There's a fire station on Cypress Avenue in Chaucer. They are standard streets. This is exactly where we should be building ADUs. And so I am interested in going at this, perhaps with a scalpel and not a machete, to quote David.
God help us. Mr. Mitchell.
Yes, sir. It's been, much of this has been well stated by my fellow commissioners, but before I give my two cents on the Hillside, one quick thing that I saw in one of the public correspondence letters that we received around language that was about, speaking about a room of 150 feet as opposed to 120, but we've, I guess, reestablished that it's 150 in this conversation. And changing that to the space as opposed to the room is whatever that lower threshold is, right? So we have that covered?
Right. Matt Kolesny planning, that is included as part of the technical modification.
Okay.
That's the first modification would do exactly that, get rid of any room limitations. It would just be the total structure size.
Great. So then that said, related to Hillside, I don't want to repeat what everyone said, but I think it is, in the end, arbitrary and too much of a blanket prohibition. You know, everyone has mentioned it, but Samantha just mentioned most recently there are several areas that are covered by this that it doesn't make sense for them to be covered by. They're exactly where we need to be looking for these types of projects. So. I'm sure we're going to have a discussion around that, but that's my 2 cents on the Hillside.
I think that was 10 cents, but thank you.
A dime, thanks.
So I want to make a couple comments and then point out some things and then suggest a course of action. So I have a lot of questions, and I'm not sure that I have the materials to understand exactly what a tiny home is and the utility questions that were raised. I think that's really new information for us. I want to better understand that versus what an RV is and how we legally distinguish those so that we don't have unintended consequences for our actions. I also need to, there's been a lot of inflammatory language around Hillsides and I want to better understand that. You would think our Hillsides are some sort of apocalypse of crumbling roads and fires. I do think there's an enhanced danger and I want to educate myself not with fiery language but facts. So I think I need to better understand the process by which we might make thoughtful recommendations to council around Hillsides, in particular the issues raised by council and by others with regards to fire danger. I don't know that I've ever actually seen something that shows enhanced fire danger if you build an ADU. I think the idea would be more people would be impacted by it, but I want to understand that from a scientific, not assertions. I also don't know that we have terribly great information on the utilities connections as proposed for tiny homes versus not requiring that. And that to me was a really important question of equity. So do we require people to spend $10,000 additional dollars? I think that was a very large figure in my mind, which maybe I'm undereducated on tiny homes, but let's better understand what the costs are. I thought the gentleman, I don't know your name, with the beard, made some interesting points around the green capabilities of tiny homes, and by requiring those things, are we inherently inhibiting the very characteristics that make them a boon to our society? I have questions about that. I don't know that we have the information today. I don't know that we've resolved the question of existing, and I'm leery to move forward on something when there is such a debate about what the law means, when I think we need a better briefing on case law or examples or information about what does existing mean. I would hate for our action to be useless today because of a misunderstanding. So I'd like some more clarity on what existing means so that folks in the public and this process is well informed by our action, not by our guess at this point, which it really would be. I think those are some of the ambiguities that I've mentioned. I also want to better understand, and I think there's conversations going on about drop wires and utility easements. I don't know that we have the full understanding, nor in my materials that I really find that elucidating about what the impact would be in our city. I think between the hillside ban proposed and the utility ban, we're excluding a large part of the city, and I want to understand what that impact would be and where we are with those conversations and get a briefing on that. I think there's ambiguity in the law right now, and I don't know that the commission has been well educated on the ambiguity, and I think we should be before we take an action that might be better informed. So my other comment is off those is, also the effective date. I need to understand better what the effective date means. There's been a great deal of ambiguity expressed around that. My other comments are more subjective and I would say anecdotal. I think there's an equity thing going on here where once again, communities of more poverty, less wealth are being asked to bear the burden of ADUs to help the city with an affordable housing crisis. And I don't think that's equitable. And I think we should really examine that. Because if it was our intent to protect vulnerable streets and hillsides, we have a better way to do that. And looking at full-size streets adjacent to transit, standard streets, we have a better way to approach that than what is being proposed here. What's being proposed here is not in my backyard, and my backyard has a nice view, yours doesn't, so you deal with the ADUs, and I don't think that's equitable. So I'm concerned about that. The other thing I'm concerned about is us rushing. I think the state law provides us a pathway right now. There is no inability for folks to do what they need to do as landowners, and I would think that we as a commission should continue this conversation until we're better informed. So I would propose that we continue this item to a meeting in the near future once we have additional time for staff to come back with some of the information and answer some of the questions that the commission has raised today. Before I make a motion, colleagues, I want to give an opportunity for folks to raise any other additional issues. My intent is to make a motion to that effect. Okay, I move that we continue this item for further discussion in a near future meeting, not date certain.
Caroline Cho, second.
James, we have a first from David Ambrose to continue the motion and a second from Caroline Cho. Will you please call for the vote?
Certainly. Commissioner Ambrose?
Yes.
Commissioner Cho?
Yes.
Commissioner Corsan?
Yes.
Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
Commissioner Millman?
Yes.
Commissioner Mitchell?
Yes.
Commissioner Perlman?
Yes.
Commissioner Dake Wilson?
Yes.
The motion carried.
Thank you. I appreciate the conversation. Having no other business before the City Planning Commission, I adjourn. We adjourned at 2:38 p.m. Thank you, everyone.